welcome everyone to the Screamcast episode 48. I'm your host, Sean DeRager, and with me, as always, Brad Henderson.
Not always. I wasn't on the Nightmare episode.
Oh, shit. That's right. You weren't, huh?
Yeah, I know.
Wow.
Yeah. It still haunts me.
I'll bet, man. I know. Yeah. It'll be okay.
My fault, though. I'll make it up to you by talking more blaxploitation,
I guess. Are continuing. Yeah, we are continuing down blaxploitation. Hope you guys dug the last episode, and hope you guys are digging this departure. It's good to talk about different things every now and then, so I'm actually enjoying it. Today, we're going to be talking about more of the modern influences of blaxploitation. But first, we got some Blu-ray announcements. A few things are out today.
Do you like what you see?
I love what I see.
Would you like to touch what you see?
Yes. Yes, I would.
The 10th of February.
Thanks for the date, Sean. The lovely, beautiful, should have been released by Criterion, you know, probably in a quadruple disc set, is Scream Factory's Vampire Kiss, High Spirits, Love at First Bite, and Once Bitten. Those are all out today.
Oh, you know, we could have just skipped the Blu-ray announcements then.
If you like that.
Some Grindhouse people do. It's, you know, whatever.
Those movies blow. Grindhouse is releasing like the 3-disc set of The Beyond, which has soundtrack in it.
Yes.
Criterion is actually releasing a Blu-ray, Don't Look Down. Cult Epics, follow-up with Necromantics 2, is out.
Oh, boom. Not already?
Yeah.
Feels like just yesterday we talked to Nico.
No, not really. Magnolia's releasing this is not a horror film. It's a drama comedy. It is super, super good. I had a blast watching this in the theater. It's called Force Majeure. It's basically a family of four that goes to a ski resort for a vacation, and there's an event that happens at the ski resort that results in kind of problems amongst the family members.
A killer? A masked killer?
No. Drama comedy. It's very, very funny. It's super uncomfortable. Huh. But yeah, it's something to definitely watch. I highly, highly suggest it. Almost made my top 10 of for 2014, but it's definitely one of the best films that I've seen last year. Cool. Grindhouse Releasing is also releasing Massacre Mafia Style, which I'm super happy about. I've heard about this film for years, but I never actually got to see it, so I'll be picking that up. And another film I haven't seen, but I have it. I'm actually kind of excited to see this one just because it looks goofy from the cover. Accelerator is releasing Poker Night. So it's a horror film, I guess, that revolves around poker. Hmm. I don't know. I want to see it because, I don't know, it looks interesting at least. But yeah, that's it.
Cool. I got a couple. The Video Nasties that I mentioned last time, that's out today. Video Nasties Part 2. From Severin. And then this isn't a horror film, but I wanted to mention it. The Spierig Brothers are releasing their movie Predestination is out. More of a sci-fi kind of time travel flick, but I really dig the Spierig Brothers and their kind of world building and stuff like that. So I think deserves a mention.
I don't like them.
You don't like them? Come on. And also is, let's see, 25th year special anniversary edition of Hardware? Is that out?
I think,
or is this a re-release?
It's a re-release in the it's a UK, I believe. We already had that released over here.
Okay, import. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's like a 3-disc set or some kind of crazy
shit.
Oh,
man.
Yeah, so it's Hardware. I mean, how many discs can Hardware be?
I love that movie, though.
Yeah, it's fun. Yeah.
All right. Cool.
So that's the Blu-ray announcement, Sean.
Boom. Oh, update. Update, everybody. And my personal, Sean's personal life update. I finally received Fright Night from Screen Archives. I think I mentioned that it got stolen. Well, it turns out they must have had an extra copy over there at Screen Archives.
They have a bunch of copies because they fucking sell them on the internet.
Oh, shit. So it's quote-unquote sold out, but they were nice enough to replace the copy of mine that got stolen. So cheers to them. I still have issues with how Twilight Time sells their limited editions and Screen Archives.
It's just dumb now. It really is. Like, okay, when we get it, it's like, oh, this is limited edition. It's awesome. But how about all the people that don't? It's just annoying. And also it's catching on. So it's just not like one title, like, oh, this month, this company is releasing. No, it's like everybody.
Yeah.
It enables
scalpers. You know, people are buying three copies of Fright Night and putting two of them on eBay. You know?
Yeah, and that's exactly what people are doing. And I mean, if people put them on internet, whatever, that's fine. I mean, people want to pay more, but the thing is, you need to limit that shit to one.
Yeah.
Just because it's just getting to the point. Also, you know, the cost of these things, like none of them are below $25.
I know, man.
So you have all these Scorpion titles that are limited to 1,000. You have Vinegar Syndrome that limits their stuff, you know, which Vinegar Syndrome, at least those films aren't as like sought after.
Yeah, it's fucking Fright Night, man. It's like,
yeah.
get Scream Factory to release that or someone who can actually do the quantity unless they're being limited by the studio.
Yeah, that could be. But, you know, it's funny because you know, it was funny when they did the clear case, like they're going to tell the difference or something. No, I mean, those things are going to go online for $100. And that's what all the Twilight Time stuff does, because people know that they can, you know, make some money.
Yeah.
And, you know, if that's what they want to do, I don't have a problem technically with people that put stuff online or, you know, might get a couple copies. But when it's that limited, you might want to just do one, because there's no point of people having two.
Yeah.
If they want to go through the trouble of like creating another account and doing that, then by all means, whatever. I mean, I don't really have a problem with all that type of thing, but my problem is that so many companies are doing limited editions that we're spending a couple hundred dollars every month because we don't want to wait because we're going to lose out.
Yeah. I don't blame the people doing it. It's the company. It's the company setting up the environment for scalping and that kind of stuff. That's annoying. It's just annoying because there's people there, you know, online and everything that are like, oh man, I missed out, you know, on the Fright Night Blu-ray, and it's sold out so fast that nobody has a chance, you know.
Yeah.
So and it's like people doing reviews of it. Why review the thing? Why review the Blu-ray? Because by the time your review posts, nobody can buy the damn thing.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. Those are kind of, I don't know. It's a give and take on that situation. I mean, if you're reviewing Fright Night, then I mean, this is one of the most notorious vampire films of all time.
Yeah.
There's no point of reviewing that, especially since it's a re-release. But anyways.
There was one review that was so incredibly long, I gave up after the first two paragraphs.
If your review is that long, then you just need to stop.
What was I going to say? Shoot, I lost it.
You lost it?
I lost my train of thought.
You know, I mean, like certain things, like one thing that always kind of still bugs me is one limited edition that I didn't get, even though the movie's not that great, is Arrow released Hellgate. And that shit sold out in no time. And I really, really enjoy that as a horror film. I know it's goofy and weird, but I still can't get that. And they go for large amounts of money. Luckily, I got Hell Comes to Frogtown, which is limited as well. So, I mean, I try to pick up – I pick and choose. I mean, sometimes I just get limited editions because they're limited, and I think that's what a lot of other people do. But now at this point, because there's so many, I'm just picking and choosing the ones that I actually like.
Yeah, you can't do that anymore.
Yeah.
So. Here's what I was going to say. Some freaking nerd on the internet found one little visual glitch in the new Fright Night Blu-ray, and they're posting all about it. they freeze, and you can only see it if you freeze frame. So Wow. Fuck you, nerds who do that.
Yeah, shit. You know, that's something. I mean, I definitely want to see like quality Blu-rays put out, but if you're gonna nitpick over like a small little thing like that,
it's like
you need to give up on life.
It's like a millisecond or whatever.
No, those people just want to find out exactly what. You know, they want to find things like that so they have something to complain about because apparently they could do better.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and okay. it's just annoying. Just yeah. Stop.
Anyway, nerds. But, yeah. Nerds, settle down.
Yeah.
Out there. I mean, I can get nerdy, but Jesus Christ. All right, man.
Oh, when you nitpick like that, that's just silly.
Ridiculous. All right, let's dive into some more blaxploitation talk.
Blaxploitation.
My first exposure to blaxploitation films, probably the first two times I ever kind of heard about black movies per se, like my first instances, is my parents went and saw Sweet Sweetback, and they couldn't take me, but they went and saw it. And they came back, and I heard them talking about it. And I remember, like, you know, I'd heard of the movie Sweet Sweetback. How old was I? 4 or something like that. I'd heard of it. I'd seen the poster. I'd seen the picture, the big red letters in his face and the hat. Then I remember my mom saying, well, no, that's not really the title. The title is Sweet Sweetback's Badass Song. And so she was like, so I heard of that movie. And then I remember watching the Johnny Carson show, and Richard Roundtree was on it. And Johnny Carson was, and we got an actor here. He's a star of a wild, wild, wild new movie. It's called Shaft. All right, and it's Richard Roundtree. And I remember as I got older, I go, what's so wild about Shaft? Is it the fact that it's a black guy? That's what makes it wild, wild, wild? I think it's just wild 3 times.
So today we're going to be diving into more of the modern influenced blaxploitation, which is kind of fun. This is the stuff that I'm probably more familiar with. But Brad, you had mentioned in your notes here to talk about Iceberg Slim.
Yeah,
and, I wanted to kind of because he's kind of another part of laying the groundwork of the whole blaxploitation movement and everything. So I'm going to be honest. I am unfamiliar. I've seen the name, but I'm unfamiliar. So I'm going to let you lay the groundwork here.
A lot of people are unfamiliar with Iceberg Slim. His name is Robert Beck. He was a pimp, like a real pimp. He nice. Started when he was very, very young, and he pimped for a very, very long time until like he was like 40 some. He went to prison, and after he got out of prison, he became an author, and he wrote his very first book was called Pimp. And it basically went through his time doing what he did and how to do it. And it was published by a company called Holloway House. And Holloway House actually released all his books. You know, the guy that ran Holloway House was white, but he saw that, you know, this book is well written because it talked about kind of the business, you know, how bad it can be. Also how good it could be at the same time, you know, money wise. So Pimp blew up among the, you know, the black community. And, you know, he had a follow up book called Trick Baby, which was made into a film, which was a blaxploitation movie. You know, he had a book called Death Wish. He had a book called Mama Black Widow. It basically just the events of his life. And then he became just an author, and he was one of the best selling authors, black authors that there were. So I think a lot of his work had to, there was a lot of influence because it was around that same time, you know. Pimp was, I forget, I think Pimp was written like in the late 60s, and then so was Trick Baby. And during that time, that transition, you know, he was actually being successful along with these movies and these other actors, directors, and everything at the same time. So I think he really kickstarted. Also, the same thing as his books have still continued to be very, very popular. At the same time, you know, there was a documentary that was released a couple years ago called Iceberg Slim: Portrait of a Pimp. That was produced by Ice-T, that actually goes into very, very good detail about his life and about how much it influenced actually these popular black people that we have today. We have, you know, between rappers and, you know, actors, they're highly influenced by this, because not because of what he did, mm-hmm. but as of how he turned his, just like Superfly, he took something bad and he molded it into something good. You know, Iceberg Slim is probably not the best role model, but he also kind of turned around his life. And even though he kind of said, this is how it's done, this is why I did well, he still turned his life around and became a different person. Almost in a way, I feel like he tries to sway people away from doing something like that because of how dangerous it can be. Mm-hmm. Even though, you know, they look up to him, I think it's kind of a good role model in a way. I know that sounds weird, but I think he did, you know, he had a huge impact. And, you know, just like I know Bill Duke, I don't know if people know the name Bill Duke. He directed a movie called Hoodlum. He's one of the bad guys in Commando. He's the black guy that fights John Matrix, okay. in the hotel room. He's in Predator. You know, Jesse Ventura, his best friend. But anyways, that's Bill Duke. And even though he's like small actor in that time, he's a big pioneer in, you know, in black cinema between directing. And he's actually has been trying for years to get an Iceberg Slim movie off the ground. He's trying to take Pimp and mold that into a film, which I would kill to see. I would love that, because we would jump back into kind of the blaxploitation Superfly era, it seems. I highly suggest, especially Pimp and Trick Baby are two really well-written books. Surprisingly, they're really, really well-written, and he's a great storyteller. And if you can find – I don't know if Iceberg Slim, the documentary, was ever like picked up and released. I'm sure it was. But that's a really, really great documentary. It is fucking funny. Just the story – I mean, he died years ago. He died of diabetes, I believe. But, you know, he's lived on for, I mean, I think he died in the 90s, mm-hmm. but he's lived on and still talked about regularly, you know. And I very first heard Iceberg Slim because of Snoop Dogg. He was like in an interview or something, and he mentioned Iceberg Slim, and he talked, and I didn't know what, I was like, what the hell is that? You know, is that like a code? Is that code word? And then I was like, I looked it up, and then I saw it, and I was like, oh man, you know. And so I eventually started looking into it a little bit, and you know, a few years later, the documentary came out, and it's very intriguing.
Yeah, the documentary is produced by Ice-T.
Yeah.
It's available. It looks like it's available on Google Play, but looks like it's, you have to buy it for $14.99. But it's available to rent on Amazon. For $2.99.
Yeah.
So
I highly recommend that. It's a great documentary, and it's just fun, because you know, they interview everybody they can in the black community, mm-hmm. and they all have these stories, and they know who he was. They know what he did. And, you know, I mean that in a sense of like, you know, they kind of put a comedic spin on the whole thing.
Cool.
But yeah, highly suggest it, because it's a huge impact in art, and also just as an author.
Awesome.
So I mean, black people were hitting it everywhere in the 70s. I mean, they had their hands in it, and they were, you know, they were molding and changing things. I don't even think white people even knew what was going on. You know, it was something hidden for black people. I think that's pretty cool.
I wanted to see the films and when the explosion happened in 73 and 74, but they weren't playing around my house because at the time I lived in, didn't live in a black neighborhood, so they weren't playing around me. So I'm like watching Soul Train on Saturday and seeing the trailers for that and listening to K-Day, which was the Soul station out here in Los Angeles, and hearing the radio spots on there. But my mom was going out with like a lot of black guys at the time, all right? And one of them was this football player guy, I don't remember his name. And he was like, you know, dating a girl and she's got a young son, so you're gonna take him out for a day, all right, kind of show him around and be a good guy. So he bought me a football and bought me some boy kind of toy and took me down to downtown LA.
So moving into like, so we had blaxploitation era happen in the early 70s, and moving into, I feel like, I want to say the 90s, early 90s, we kind of had a mini explosion of more kind of black films. I think a lot of them inspired by kind of the gangster rap that was going on, that was getting really popular around that time. That seems like it catapulted a lot of things front and center with the explosion of NWA and Ice-T, Ice Cube, all that stuff. And for me personally, we talk about personally, you started watching all these movies, in the 70s. I started watching, my cousin was really into rap music and he turned me on to more of the late 80s. Cause I always liked, Run DMC and stuff like that. But then he turned me on to the more of the gangster rap type stuff when I was in junior high. And so I started listening to NWA, Two Live Crew and all this stuff. This little white boy in Iowa, hiding, wow. hiding tapes from my parents. So that I started getting more interested in, paying more attention to kind of black culture and things like that. Now I wasn't one of these guys that started white guys started acting black. We had those guys in our school, who started wearing the saggy jeans and walking with a pimp limp. I saw those guys and I was like, I'm not going to go that far, but I appreciated, I think, that there was more things coming out. And then there was movies like Boys in the Hood was huge for me because I bought the soundtrack after watching the movie. That movie was, I think I was blown away at kind of how raw the movie was and just in your face a little bit. And then, New Jack City and all these movies started coming out that I started paying attention to in that time. And then I feel like since then there hasn't been that many movies like that. Cause it's weird how throughout time and decades and everything, how different things kind of catch the public eye.
Yeah.
What about you? What was your, around that time? Am I in the right direction with the gangster rap kind of, cause it was controversial, right? It was
No, it was. I mean, like we said in the last episode, there was, a huge boom in blaxploitation in the 70s, and then slowly towards the end of the 70s, it kind of fizzled. But it still remained somewhat because we still had it happening. There was towards the end of the 80s, there was kind of another spurt, and it was mostly because thanks to Fred Williamson, Pam Grier, Jim Brown, Jim Kelly, we still had these films going on. Mm-hmm. Because we had, the Black Cobra films, yeah, with Fred Williamson in the 80s. It was a great trilogy. We had, Larry Cohen came back, because he directed Black Caesar in 1973. Larry Cohen came back and he did a movie in around 95, 96 called Original Gangsters that has Pam Grier, Jim Brown, and Fred Williamson, where it's just this fucking great action movie. It's really good. And that was done in 96. So he still had movies pop up here and there. In the 80s and 90s. But like I said in the last episode, I think it was kind of done. It made its mark.
Yeah.
But there was certain filmmakers like Mario Van Peebles. He made Posse, he made New Jack City. he kept that going. You know, Posse is obviously a huge, huge thing with blaxploitation, because we did have, like I mentioned, we had, you know, the Legend Nigger, Charlie and Boss Nigger back in the 70s, doing the Westerns, you know, and he continued that. It's a group of black soldiers that are basically, you know, going after some gold. You know, New Jack City is obviously, you know, Wesley Snipes and Judd Nelson's in that movie. That cracks me up. But, you know, Ice-T. Ice-T is a huge – just hearing him talk about blaxploitation and what it means to him. There's a great interview, if you can ever find it, with Tupac Shakur's mother. Tupac Shakur was – like loved blaxploitation. You know, he would watch the movies constantly, and he pulled a lot of things from that in his music career. And he would sing about it, hiddenly, of course, but it would inspire him to write some of his music. You know, we had, a huge wave of black directors that came. You know, John Singleton did Boys in the Hood, and he became an extremely notable director, even still to this day. I mean, he did this kind of unofficial sequel to Shaft, because I believe it's like his cousin or something. Samuel Jackson is isn't that what it is? Because it's not a remake.
The newer Shaft movie?
Yeah.
I don't know. I didn't really like that movie.
It's not the greatest. But, I mean, he did Boys in the Hood, and then he did that Poetic Justice.
He's the nephew of the original 1970s detective.
Okay, nephew. Okay, that's what it is.
You know, I didn't really put that together when I watched it. I just thought it was just a straight remake when I saw it in the theater.
No. Yeah, it was kind of like a spinoff sequel. You know, Ernest Dickerson, who, you know, it's funny because a lot of people don't know who Ernest Dickerson is, and he's a black director. I mean, he made Juice with Tupac Shakur, and that's one of the main things that Tupac Shakur wanted to do.
I had that soundtrack.
He takes all those characters from those old blaxploitation movies and channels them into this movie. And also, you know, Ernest Dickerson has taken so many things from blaxploitation and put it in his films. One of my favorites of all time is Surviving the Game. You know, and this goes back to, just because a black person's in a movie doesn't make it blaxploitation.
Right.
There's certain elements and certain things they have to use and do in order to emulate or, you know, just take that road into blaxploitation. You know, it's funny because even like Tales from the Crypt, Demon Knight, which is an excellent horror film, it kind of has those elements of blaxploitation with Jada Pinkett, you know, in the film, like kind of like the coffee badassery. I mean, she's kind of like a slave, but then she turns out to be kind of the hero, you know. Not saying that's all, you know, modern blaxploitation, but even, you know, Tupac Shakur was in Above the Rim that was very popular. A big one for me that I absolutely love is Trespass, Walter Hill's Trespass. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of shit in there that takes that history of blaxploitation and throws it in there. So, I mean, it's lived on kind of in almost hiding. You know, it's more or less an homage than it is, you know, a blaxploitation film.
Right. And in all those movies, the only ones that I can see that could possibly, or if they were done in the 70s, they would have been straight up blaxploitation, would be movies like Posse, for sure.
Posse is very, very close to being that.
Yeah. When that movie ended, there's like that rap song at the end. I took my little tape deck and I taped that song off there so I can have it. And then, I guess not necessarily Hoodlum, but I liked but it was fun. It was black gangsters in the 30s, you know what I mean? And that was cool. Like, cause I loved gangster flicks. And then, you know, and at that time I was trying to watch as many these black oriented movies, you know, the black cast and stuff. Cause I was really into it. I was like, I love the idea of black gangsters, you know? So that could have been, I wanted to bring up there's two more Mario Van Peebles movies that I haven't. I don't think I've ever seen or didn't really know where either. But he did a movie called Panther.
Like 96,
based off of his dad's novel.
Yeah, he did Panther.
And then him and his dad directed a movie called Gang in Blue.
Well, I've never even seen that one.
Yeah, I don't know if it was a HBO type movie or what, but I'm just kind of looking through here, and so there's things that that I'm like writing down. Like, there's so much that I want to check out, you know.
Yeah, so there's a really great one that it's kind of funny because it's very very overlooked. Is One Down, Two to Go. Which stars kind of the best kick-ass cast possible. I mean, it has Fred Williamson, Jim Brown, Jim Kelly, and Richard Roundtree.
Man.
And it's directed by Fred Williamson. And it's basically these three guys go after all these people that killed their black friend. And it's just great because it has everything that everything that's blaxploitation supposed to be is in that film. Plus you have Fred Williamson directing, and you just have kind of the three most notable black male actors that there were at that time that really, really took. I mean, you have Shaft, you have Hammer, and you have Slaughter. That's how I, because that's the characters that they played early on. But one thing that actually got me into Fred Williamson, there were a few things, because I said that I saw Superfly, in my early 20s. But one thing that always hit me was when I saw From Dusk Till Dawn, because when I wanted to go see From Dusk Till Dawn, I was very much into makeup artists, so I knew who Tom Savini was. Greg Nicotero's in the film. Cheech Marin, Harvey Keitel. It's just this barrage of old cool actors, and Tarantino's kind of always done that. But the big black guy in it, I was like, who is this? He's kind of a badass. There's a lot of focus around him, and I slowly dived into that. I found out who Fred Williamson was, and then it just became, he's just so charismatic in his films. He's just, it's funny because I think Tarantino said this is, back in the 70s, Fred Williamson was the black Burt Reynolds. He had the look, he was just good looking, he was charming, and he just, he stormed the box office. I mean, every year he had one or two blaxploitation movies come out, and then he still continued that route of making and emulate the blaxploitation films. I mean, even from, like I said, original Gangsters, to Inglourious Basterds, he took that to the next level. And then he started doing the Italian apocalyptic spinoffs and everything like that. I mean, he was just the ultimate badass.
Yeah.
And he still continued, and even still to this day, he's taking these roles and still continuing to kind of do this blaxploitation thing.
And downtown LA at that time, the whole Broadway area with all the old theaters and everything, that was like a black Hollywood. It was like a black Westwood, all right? It was like all those big theaters up and down the street. Every film was a blaxploitation film. Every film was a black film. And they had, just like in Hollywood Boulevard, they didn't have the marquee with the name with the letters. No, they had a big, the big thing there with Hitman with a picture of, Bernie Casey on it. And, the Mac and, picture of Max Julian on the marquee. I mean, it was like the old days. I remember actually, I didn't know where I was. And he was driving down the street. I felt like I was in a black world. Every theater was a blaxploitation film, except for one theater was showing Five Fingers of Death. That was the only one that wasn't a blaxploitation film. And so the film that we saw, he goes, well, which one you want to see? And I even love the fact that he took me, okay, I'm going to take you out, all right? And he drives me up and down this street with nine theaters, all showing blaxploitation. Okay, which one you want to see? And I don't even know who this guy is now, and I love him for that, all right? I will always love him for that. And I had seen the trailers for Black Gun on TV, and it looked really good, all right? So I picked Black Gun.
I just looked up the DVD for Panther, the Mario Van Peebles flick, and it's going for $199.
Yeah, that's the one thing that sucks, because I even think Original Gangsters is kind of like that, where it's very, very expensive, just because it's been out of print for a while.
Ah, that's lame, man. So many good movies.
Yeah, it happens. I mean, I'm hoping that stuff like that, you know, gets re-released, because I think that's what we need. We really need a resurrection of these films. You know, because there's like Xenon Pictures that releases a lot of stuff on DVD. You know, that's obviously a company that takes a big pride in their blaxploitation. And MGM owns a lot of it too. So I'm hoping that these go through and really, really pick back up.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah, Gang in Blue is another one that's expensive too. But it looks like it's a part of a three pack somewhere. So I don't know.
Ooh.
You can buy used for $1.82.
There you go.
There you go. That's not bad. All right. Well, so, the other one I'll have to try to find. Speaking of Tarantino, I wanted to talk about Tarantino because, like, he's not necessarily blaxploitation, but definitely, especially with Pulp Fiction and Jackie Brown,
yeah,
you definitely feel the it's in its veins, you know what I mean? And also, you know what I was saying on the last show about, like, movies being multi-ethnic and things like that, and not worrying about it. Like, everyone has a role, everyone's great, and it's not, you know, it's a multicultural cast. That's what I like about Tarantino, is it seems like he goes out of his way to make sure his movies have, you know, multi-ethnic casting, you know. Inglourious Basterds, I'm not too sure, just because of the time and setting it was in. You know, all of his other movies, Reservoir Dogs is pretty much all white.
Yeah, I think it's mostly Pulp Fiction and Jackie Brown.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Jackie Brown is by far one of the more bigger blaxploitation films, just because, not because of the cast, but about, you know, how, you know, Pam Grier's character is just a normal woman, you know, that gets caught up in this thing. So he took Rum Punch, the novel, by Elmore Leonard, and he created, you know, kind of took that, those elements, and also took elements of blaxploitation and just kind of molded them together. I mean, we even have Robert Forster, who is in a lot of these blaxploitation films, and Sid Haig too, which was, you know, Sid Haig, who, if people don't know that name, he played, you know, Captain Spaulding in, you know, Rob Zombie movies, and he does horror now.
He was in one of those women in prison flicks, right? Or not women in prison, but they were, what was the name of that movie? I just watched it recently. It's about these women that get kidnapped in, like, the Philippines or whatever.
And they're
held as sexual slaves.
Ooh.
But he's in it, and he's awesome.
Yeah. But yeah, he was in a lot of blaxploitation movies. He was in, you know, like Coffee and things like that. But, yeah, he takes things like that, you know, but Tarantino takes things from all movies, you know, cause that's what he loves. I mean, a lot of people have problems with that. You know, I think it's kind of cool, cause he kind of pays respect, but he also just kind of blatantly, like, rips off things, but you know, he does it well. And, you know, I like that he does that, because that also sheds light on certain things that maybe people didn't know about, like, you know, Pam Grier's in the movie, Fred Williamson is in, you know, From Dusk Till Dawn. It just little things like that, you know. Of course, you know, in Pulp Fiction, we have Marcellus Wallace and Jules. Those two alone are characters from blaxploitation movies, like, not directly, like, they didn't pull those, but just how the Jerry Curls of Jules, and just the way he speaks and his mannerisms, he is like that Superfly, that character. You know, Marcellus Wallace is that mobster, that black mobster that you're just terrified of because you know that he's going to find a way to get you. So I really, really enjoy those elements to those films, and I think he does a very, very good job of taking it and paying respect and not just kind of ripping those off in particular. Yeah. I mean, other things he'll like take lines and shit like that. Well, but
what I like about Jackie Brown from all of Quentin Tarantino's movies, it feels like his most kind of complete and more like traditional type movie. You know, he's playing around a lot less in Jackie Brown with different things and taking less from other things in that movie.
Yeah.
Whereas movies like Inglourious Basterds and then Django Unchained, he's taking a lot of different things and like those aren't like they're good to a certain extent, but they're so kind of choppy, I guess, that I couldn't. They don't feel like a full movie. You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? Like, I think Jackie Brown feels from A to B like a film, whereas the other things kind of seem like kind of mashups, you know, in a sense. Maybe it's just him more recently with the last two movies. I haven't been as like all about them. Like, they've been okay, but I can see like the seams where he's taken different things. And maybe it's just because by now I've seen more movies, you know, but I'm not sure if he felt that way with Pulp Fiction or not. It's been a while since I've seen Pulp Fiction, so.
I mean, I don't agree with that so much. I think he's getting better, with his movies, because the stuff that he's making now is stuff that I really, really, really want to see. You know, even though I like Pulp Fiction and Reservoir Dogs, he's kind of making throwback films at this point, and I enjoy that a lot more. I mean, because Inglourious Basterds is obviously, you know, kind of takes those war movies and Inglourious Basterds, and he kind of does his own thing. Django Unchained is black slavery films from the 70s, and also spinning on, you know, the Sergio. Corbucci, I believe his name is, you know, taking that Django character and making him a slave, just kind of mashing those up together. So I understand like the genre mashups, but I think he's doing genre mashups and throwback, and I actually really, really dig that. I enjoy that a lot more than stuff like Pulp Fiction. I mean, I think Pulp Fiction is a better film because there's certain elements that I enjoy more, because I mean, even that's a mashup,
right?
You know, just how the stories are intertwined. Yeah. I think Reservoir Dogs is a straight up, you know, criminal, you know, crime drama.
Yeah.
But, I like what he does. You know, I have to give props, because I feel that, you know, hopefully I do. Whenever I get there, whenever I start writing and I start making movies and getting there, it's kind of something that I want to do. I want to take all those genres, mash them up, make my own thing and make it special, and also shed light on these forgotten gems that we have, you know?
That's what Quentin Tarantino does best is when you hear him talk about stuff, he's so passionate. And he's another director that, you know, that he – because he talks about like Detroit 9000 and like Switchblade Sisters and things like that, where you hear him talking about it and you're like, man, I really want to check out that movie. And he loves the 70s. He loves the 70s as a decade in film, but you can tell he does love blaxploitation. And he's another director that kind of, when I wanted to start checking out more blaxploitation, like after seeing Badass, he kind of fueled the fire a bit, where makes me, every time I hear him talk or see one of his movies, there's always a hint to some sort of blaxploitation film that I want to see, you know. So he's definitely, I love Tarantino, you know what I mean? I think a lot of people can pick him apart, but as an artist and what he does, like his passion is infectious, you know, and he's just a fun director to follow. And every movie of his is an event. He doesn't do a ton of movies every year. Like he almost has perfect timing every time he releases a movie. And now we got Hateful Eight finally being filmed right now. You know, so
that was a weird thing that how that came.
Wasn't
about.
That weird? Like somebody leaked the script and he said he wasn't gonna do it, you know, and it was a really good script, and then he did like a reading of that script and then he changed the script so he feels better about putting it into making a movie out of it. It's so weird.
Yeah, it's at times I think it's like a whole publicity stunt.
Yeah.
But I mean, he's not a publicity stunt guy. You know, he's very much, you know, a hardcore filmmaker that really enjoys what he does. And, you know, that's why I really, really dig Tarantino, just because of how he does it and how he handles his movies. So,
yeah,
you know, Pulp Fiction, I would consider Pulp Fiction his best film, just because he has so many cool little elements and so many like little hidden stories. Just for example, like what's in the briefcase,
right?
You know, there's a whole backstory to that. Have you ever heard that story? What's in the briefcase?
I may have, but it may have been years. So
it's Marcellus Wallace's soul.
Okay.
You know, and the devil has it.
Right,
and
right.
They're back to get it. And, you know, it's funny because, you know, obviously when they open it, it glows, right, and it makes a noise and everything like that. And, you know, the combination on the briefcase is 666.
Uh-huh.
Just little things like that. It's like little hidden things that he does that remind me of kind of, you know, 80s horror films, 70s and 80s horror films, and, you know, kind of like little hidden little messages. And the same thing is with like Django Unchained, just like little elements of like the Fred Williamson trilogy of, you know, like Legend of Nigger Charlie, and also taking the Django character and changing him to being a black guy.
Uh-huh.
You know, I really, really enjoy him pulling those things. I don't think he's relatively like stealing in a sense. No. You know, he just really enjoys that. He wants those movies to live on.
Yeah, he's paying, you know? He's paying homage, and he's bringing a lot of these movies back into the forefront, you know, which is awesome.
So Black Gun with Jim Brown and Luciana Paluzzi and Martin Landau and the prettiest woman in blaxploitation is Brenda Sykes. that's what I saw. And it was playing with a movie called Get Off the Bus The Bus is Coming. Thank you. And it was funny. So I go into this theater and these downtown LA theaters are huge. So he takes me up into the balcony. So we're sitting up there in the balcony, and The Bus is Coming is playing, and everybody is talking through it, and they're making fun of everybody. They're like, "Oh, suck my dick! Oh, ha 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 ha! Fuck you, motherfucker!" All right, all this shit is going on through it. I've never been in a theater where this was going on before. I mean, how old am I? I'm in third grade, okay, maybe less, and like, wow, this is really kind of cool. And then Black Gun started. And then everyone shut up. No one was talking through Black Gun. All right? And I watched it and I loved it. I even remember the comments. All right? Some guy sitting behind me. All right? Like Jim Brown, like getting out of a car at the end of the movie. There's a little freeze frame on him. You know, just, you know, his shoulders and his chest and his face and freeze. Credits roll. And this guy behind me. That's a movie about a bad motherfucker.
What did you think, like, when he showed up as the, like, the Australian slaver guy? Did that, like, that's the one thing about Django that kind of, it kind of killed the movie a little bit for me at that time. But when I think about it now, I just had to laugh because this horrible Australian accent is just so over the top.
Yeah, I don't know. I enjoy that for the most part. I mean, even in what's it? Sukiyaki Western Django.
Oh, Sukiyaki Western Django. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, even in that, he plays.
Yeah, it's a lot. He shows up.
he shows up in the beginning telling a story, like throws the egg up in the air and mixes it and, you know, tells a story. I don't know. I enjoy when he comes on screen because I know what he's going to do.
Yeah.
He's going to be the comic relief. And I don't think he thinks he's a good actor, even though he did a really, really good job as Richie in From Dusk Till Dawn.
From Dusk Till Dawn, he's really fucking good. And in Reservoir Dogs, he has – his little monologue about Like a Virgin is fantastic. Like, he has good elements. Like, he's, you know, he's been good.
When he shows up, I just smile because I know that I'm going to be laughing and having a good time.
Right.
I don't know. I really enjoy that aspect. Even when he's in Jimmy. In Pulp Fiction,
uh-huh.
You know, he's telling Marcellus Wallace, you know, this black guy, he keeps on saying nigger to him, and it's just like, it's fine, you know?
Right.
You know, yeah. Just that whole sequence where he's like, do you see a sign on my house that says dead nigger storage? Like, just, he keeps doing it and doing it and doing it, and it's just like, you know, he's like the only guy that can get away with it, right. It seems. Because even I know when Jackie Brown came out, you know, there was a big issue, and even Django, of how many times they say it.
Right.
You know,
yeah, but
he's getting a lot of shit, and it's
but
like,
you look at the context of the story, yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah, I was like, listen, I mean, we're not having a hate, you know, a hate film. We're not having. He's not doing anything bad. He loves these movies. He loves these characters, and of course, you know, what else is he going to say?
Well, what else is a slaver going to say? You know what I mean? Like, oh.
Yeah, we're dealing with black guys. You know, they say it like Tarantino means no disrespect when he uses that word. You know, even if they say it they say it derogatory all the time. No, watch 1970s films. They say it all the time. The white guy says it to the black guy, and it's extremely derogatory.
Right.
You know what happens? He shoots right back off and calls him honky or whitey.
Right.
You know? So I don't know. I don't give him any shit for that. I don't even really notice it when it happens. Well, it's mostly like later on. They're like, oh, they said it too much. And I'm
right.
Like,
eh. Well, that's the thing, though. You look at the story in context of the story and the characters, and it makes sense. And for me, it didn't raise any flags at all, because these are despicable people. These are people that are used to – I mean, they're buying and selling black people for, you know, into slavery. So of course these people are going to use that term, and that in the context of the story, it makes sense. Now, if it was just some guy that's supposed to be like the hero or whatever, just shooting off that word or whatever, like even with you reading off these film titles, like I always have a hard time saying it, you know? But yeah, in the context, I feel like society is still kind of like almost too scared, you know, overly cautious. Like, there's certain things that, you know, we need to be careful with. But I think in film and stuff like that, people get a little too, too touchy, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I understand, you know, I don't think people should throw around the word, and we're not meant to. But
right,
as far as like film and stuff like that, I really don't think people should nitpick at it. I think they need to look at the story as a whole and the context, and then go from there.
Yeah,
having a white power film where they're saying all the time. Plus, it's art. I mean, there should be really most of the time, a good portion of the time, there shouldn't be any censorship on art. Now, as far as that goes, I mean, sometimes you do need some, because you don't want a hate, hate too much hatred going on just for the sake of being mean. Because I mean, obviously, there's films that would do that. Luckily with Tarantino, he doesn't do that at all. He's very, very respectful.
Yeah.
Even if he's using the word 1,000 times, he's very respectful when he does it. I mean, obviously, he's not racist whatsoever. He loves these movies, you know. So I think people need to kind of let up on that a little bit.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I agree.
And then we moved to Torrance, which is right next to Carson, which is the big black area. It's one of the biggest black areas in the South Bay area, all right? And so, and there they had the Carson Twin Cinema, which showed nothing but blaxploitation movies and all the exploitation movies, you know, all the kung fu films, all the stuff that was coming into town for a week. It played the Carson Twin, and all the stuff that had been playing for months and was getting ready to leave, we played the Carson Twin, you know? So you would have AIP's triple feature of JD's Revenge, Cornbread Earl and Me, and Cooley High. And then the next theater is like Star is Born, all right, which has been playing for 6 months, and this is its last week. If it's playing at the Carson Twin Cinema, that means it's on its way out of town. And it might even be playing there with a kung fu movie that the Exchange House just sent them, you know, Soul Brothers Kung Fu with Carl Scott and Bruce Lai. And I loved it. And I went to see all of them every single solitary week. And I'd try to go, I'd go every Saturday and Sunday, and I'd go Saturday nights, and the reefer would be just flowing in the theater. That was sort of my indoctrination into that world.
Moving along here, kind of keeping the thread of like Pam Grier and everything. And yeah, I wanted to bring this up too. Like when we were talking about Superfly last time, but I didn't get a chance to. Snoop Dogg seems to be carrying, or at least early in his career, was carrying on kind of the Superfly type aesthetic. You know what I mean? Like, you could almost see Snoop Dogg in a Superfly film. And, yeah. You brought up a movie, and I was going to try to watch it for the show, but I didn't get a chance. But in 2001, he did a movie called Bones, where, his ghost comes back to seek revenge on the those that killed him. Directed by Ernest Dickerson.
Yep. Yeah, Ernest Dickerson, he's a great horror film director. You know, he's done a number of great films, and I remember when Bones came out, I, you know, went to the theater. And you know, we have Jimmy Bones who comes back to kind of clean up his neighborhood. I think that's actually what the front of the box says. But, you know, it's not a great film by any means, but it's a lot of fun because it takes a lot of blaxploitation elements and puts it into, you know, kind of a horror film of a modern horror film. So, you know, he's murdered and then he comes back and, you know, bunch of CGI stuff happens. But
uh-oh. See, now I don't want to watch it.
But, you know, shut up, Sean.
I think it's streaming somewhere. I'll watch it one of these times.
But, you know, I mean, Jimmy Bones, just the name alone is, you know, that's a blaxploitation character. Yeah. You know, and I believe that the movie takes place like in the late 70s, so kind of when blaxploitation was dying out, you know, and then he comes back later. You know, it's just a fun, it you know, bombed at the box office. Yeah. I mean, I don't expect it doing well, but you know, it's a modern horror blaxploitation film that I think that is super underrated. And it's a really fun movie. Yeah. Don't go by any means going and thinking that this thing's going to be great, because it's not by any means, but it's very, very fun. It's a goofy, modern kind of blaxploitation film. So, and Pam Grier's in it. So yeah, that's a plus.
There you go. He's always awesome. Snoop Dogg, he seems to be kind of trying to carry on the torch, or at least did for this. I mean, his newer music is even kind of more like, you know, 70s-ish, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
He's always kind of carried the torch for the early blaxploitation, like I said, Superfly, you know.
I mean, that's something that, you know, between the rappers and the 80s and, you know, these kind of funk musicians. Yeah. I mean, even stuff from, you know, KC and the Sunshine Band to, you know, Parliament and everything like that. And, you know, George Clinton. Is it Clinton?
Yeah.
Yeah, George Clinton, and just all these, you know, especially like even old Stevie Wonder.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's just this funky, you know, funk, and it's just a great little name for a genre of music too, funk.
Funk.
You know, as soon as you hear funk, you know where you're going.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, I think there's so many things. That's the greatest thing about right after kind of the, you know, during the, like, right after, before, during all this civil rights stuff, black people just dove into everything, you know, books, movies, just to get their voice out there, because they couldn't stand on the side of the street and say it because they were going to get arrested or beaten. You know,
yeah.
Obviously they had, you know, rallies and things like that, because you wouldn't want to fuck with the Black Panthers. But, you know, they did this to have a voice, to document it, so that way it wouldn't die.
Right.
You know, with poetry, with music, they just put it all out there. And luckily we still, you know, that's even more popular than before. I mean, rap is an all time high at this point. I mean, it's not very good. But, you know, they're still continuing. You know, I think movies and in general have kind of died off with black people for the most part, just because we don't have too many lead black actors. It just seems like Denzel Washington's the only one that has.
Yeah, they always go to Denzel.
You know, I don't know. I think that. That's something that we need to open the doors a little bit on, but that's just my opinion. I mean, I just feel that, you know, we need to embrace, not saying, oh, you need to put black people in everything by any, you know, not that, but I think that, you know, we need to look at, open the doors a little bit, maybe, you know, get some more kick-ass blaxploitation films out there.
Yeah. So agreed. Cool.
But
well, we're going to be diving into back more into actually next week we're going to be diving into some into the blaxploitation horror.
Yeah, and there's a good amount of blaxploitation horror films, which is super super cool.
So that'd be fun.
And then, you know, they really did there's a lot of them too.
So. Yeah. And then after that we'll be wrapping up the month, hoping to have a special guest. We're gonna keep our fingers crossed that
the special guest is, it's a long shot, but yep. We're trying. Not gonna say who it is, but yep. it's in the works. We just hope
that happens. That'll be a nice cap on the month. That. So cool. Well, you know what? That movie that I was thinking of with Sid Haig, The Big Bird Cage, Pam Grier and Sid Haig.
Ooh, okay.
Good flick. It's there's the Blu-ray is out there. It's a three pack. Women in Cages from Shout Factory.
Women in Cages.
It has Big Bird Cage, Big Doll House, and Women in Cages.
You like Women in Cages, don't you?
Well, those flicks are fun. I mean, but those movies are women empowerment. You know.
Yeah.
Those are that's another subgenre
too.
We
can talk about women empowerment.
Yeah, because those movies.
Those still are very, very strong and still exist.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the covers, you look at the posters and they look like exploitation, like they're, you know, scantily clad women and, oh my gosh, they're in cages. But it's almost to attract certain people in the movie. But then you get in there and it's like, oh, these women are about to kick some ass. You know, it's not there. And the cool thing about these movies is, especially in the 70s, is they use their sexuality to get them out of certain situations and to seek on some revenge, like Big Birdcage. They fuck a dude up, man. they mess with a character that's obviously gay, and they take turns with him, which is just fucked up.
Yeah, well, I mean, even with kind of Tarantino, you get back to Tarantino with Death Proof, you know.
Oh yeah,
he
totally
has that huge women empowerment movie, but also mixes kind of. You know, Kim is obviously kind of a Pam Grier, like just loud and just tells it how it is, you know, which is a lot of fun on that level. So, I forgot to mention that. But that's just another Tarantino movie where he, you know, uses a lot of elements from those and throws it in and makes a kick ass movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Tarantino's great, man. Death Proof gets a bad rap. I dig
it. It does?
It does. People give
who
a
hates
shit.
Death? Who hates Death Proof?
Dude, a lot of people. Like, every time some people bring it up on Twitter, it's just like, there's certain people.
I will fucking fight somebody.
Dude, it happens again. I'll let you know, man. We'll start it up.
Yeah, because, I mean, okay, you have an opinion on – I mean, people have an opinion on a movie. I'm not going to really, you know, harp on it.
Well, they're saying it's certain, like it's his worst movie. And, like, dude, I had a blast with that movie. I had a blast with Grindhouse.
I don't think there is, like, a worst movie. I think they're all on par with
I mean, it's like saying Pixar has a bad movie if you discount the Cars movies.
They do. They had that Planes movie, too. That's
that was Disney, actually. Disney took up the torch and took that up. But other than the Cars movies.
I hate Wall-E.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
I think Wall-E is terrible.
Wow. All right. Well, yeah.
Actually, I don't think I've actually liked a Pixar movie since Up.
Well, you have no soul. So
that is true. So for your
and you don't have small children that just eat that stuff up. And if I'm going to watch an animated movie, I would rather have it be Pixar than a freaking DreamWorks animated movie. Dear God, Penguins of Madagascar, kill me now.
KBILLY, home of rock.
All right, well, that's going to do it for this week's show. I got word from Brian. Like, no Brian again. I got word from Brian. He may try to join us near the end of the month, so we will see what happens with that.
Sigh? Is that a sigh?
Yeah. Anyway, so, you know, I'm I don't know.
We miss Brian.
We do, man.
Basically what we're trying to say.
Going through withdrawals here. But next week, I'm excited to talk about next week. I have a lot to watch to gear up for next week, and I'm super pumped about diving into these movies. If you have any comments about these shows, if there's any movies that we're leaving out that you love, let us know. Drop us a line via email over at thescreamcast.com. Click on the comments button and drop us an email there. We'd love to hear your thoughts and how blaxploitation has affected you. If blaxploitation is something that affected your life personally, like if you have a story, we would love to hear from you about that. So drop us a line through email.
I like how you stumbled over it. We would love to hear from you.
Maybe.
Let us know. And also let us know what you think of kind of the change up with the show, because I mean, if people like it, then we might, you know, kind of do more things like this off and on.
Yeah, I think every now and then we can depart and do stuff like this. I think this month for sure it makes sense. And we are kind of leading into horror, because there's, I mean, we got Blackula coming out on Scream Factory. It's already out on a UK disc, but you know, I feel like with those movies, instead of just watching them for goofy kind of black versions of Dracula, like, I think there's a lot of subtext that, you know, would be helpful for you to learn about and know about and before jumping into these movies. And that's kind of what we're trying to do. And I got a little bit nervous because I was like, oh, here we go, two white boys talking about blaxploitation, you know? Like,
yeah, no, I mean, I feel that I personally, not to sound like an asshole, I know a lot more about blaxploitation than probably your average person.
Well, yeah, like you know, like I've said, it's a genre, you know, that I was always kind of scared to touch because I was like, I don't have that, you know, they don't speak to me personally, but the more you kind of dig deeper into these movies, I think the more enriching they are. You know, you see them more for just being these genre flicks. You know, there's a lot going on, so.
There's some amazing films.
Hopefully, this will
in this subgenre.
Yeah, hopefully this will steer you guys to check some of these out. So you can find us on Twitter, Scream_cast, and drop us a line there. And you can find our personal Twitters through that as well. Again, want to thank oneofus.net for posting the show every week. They've been great. And then over in the UK, nerdly.co.uk for giving us some visibility over there. They've been awesome, so we really appreciate that. And again, music by Wolfmen of Mars. Their album is coming out very, very, very soon. And I believe they're having a vinyl option, which is nice if you're a vinyl collector like me. So I believe it's coming out in March. So coming up very soon. So keep your eyes open for that. We'll definitely let you guys know once that is out. And the music used in the show will be in a song. It's actually, they wrote a song, gave us the kind of temp tracks and stuff to use for the show. And I'm pumped to hear the final version, man. Are you?
Yes.
Yeah. Raging. Do you have a raging hard on for that?
Oh, I didn't talk about boners.
No, I had to bring boners in at
some point. Masturbation. Yes, I have a big boner.
Okay. All right. And with that, all of you guys have a great week. Talk to you next time.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Oh, don't tell me you're leaving. The party's just begun.
What the fuck was I talking about? So True Blue was about a guy, touches a girl that meets a nice guy, but like a virgin with a metaphor for big dicks.
Okay, let me tell you what like a virgin's. It's all about this cooze, who's a regular fuck machine. I'm talking morning, day, night, afternoon. Dick, 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 dick.
How many dicks is that?
A lot. So one day, she meets this John Holmes motherfucker, and it's like, whoa, baby. I mean, this cat is like Charles Bronson in The Great Escape. He's digging tunnels. All right, now she's getting this serious dick action, and she's feeling something she ain't feeling since forever. Pain. Pain.
Chew, Toby, chew.
It hurts. It hurts her. It shouldn't hurt. You know, her pussy should be bubble gum by now. But when this cat fucks her, it hurts. It hurts just like it did the first time. You see, the pain is reminding a fuck machine what it was once like to be a virgin. Hence, like a virgin.